Welcome to the Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 5, Return of the Mandalorian.
I thought this is Season 3, Episode 1.
I must have misnumbered it. No, I don't know. It was surprising, I guess, to see The Mandalorian back so early. No one told us, right? They just put up an episode of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange decision, but honestly, I think it takes a lot of guts for the mouse to like admit that, like, you know, halfway through the season, Boba Fett just wasn't working, canceling it and just, you know, rushing the Mandalorian back, because
four episodes is a good run. Boba had his time. It just didn't work out.
We saw Boba Fett. He took off his helmet. We're like, no, thanks. And we got our no helmet take off boy again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course. Obviously, this is a Book of Boba Fett episode, but what the hell, man? It's not a Book of Boba Fett episode. It's The Mandalorian. He's literally not in this episode.
Yeah. The Mandalorian stole Boba Fett's show from him.
Yeah.
And we actually reached out to Boba Fett. He said he wasn't that mad. He just bears no ill will to any Star Wars fans that prefer Mandalorian to him. And he just asks for you to remain neutral in the contract negotiation of the next season. No rewards, no punishment, just, you know, he'll do it all by himself. He just wants us to remain neutral. It is kind of an indictment that this episode of Boba Fett that does not contain Boba Fett but does contain the new coolest guy in the Star Wars universe is easily the best episode of the season.
Oh, you thought so? I liked large portions of it. There are a couple complaints here and there, but like, Yeah, it's definitely up there. It's, if not number one, it's number two. I really liked episode two of this show.
I was about to say, but you can definitely make an argument for episode two, but here's my argument. You put Mandalorian in for Boba Fett in episode two, and it's even better.
Yeah.
It's just straight up better.
Probably so. I don't know. It's wild. Like, I see why people are complaining about this, right? Because it feels like this should have been one show, The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett just combined, right? And we could have done away with a lot of the time wasting and side stories and shit that we were treated to in The Mandalorian, and actually been cutting back and forth between these stories. And it would have been very cool to see both of these guys eventually come together in like season two. But I don't know, maybe they're planning on taking them so far apart later on that they couldn't really do that. I've seen shows do that.
It seems like they're going to entwine these shows very, very tightly. To the point you got to ask, like, was it smart to call this the book, like, to actually make this a Book of Boba Fett? Or would they have been smarter to just restyle The Mandalorian as Mandalorians?
Yeah, totally.
And that's a show that can you know, encompass the return to the throne storyline of Bo-Katan, and it can encompass the watch the throne storyline of Boba Fett, and it can encompass the wanderings of Jaren. Like, I don't know, like, siloing all this stuff up, but you can make the same you can make the same kind of argument on the Disney side of, like, you know, maybe instead of having all, you could just have the Disney's Marvel crap, and it just runs every week, and each week it's a different, you know, slightly different person. Sometimes they work together, sometimes they're, and then this is like a comic book, and then the giant size summer crossovers are essentially the fucking movies. And then congratulations, you have reinvented the comic book on the television screen. I don't know. It's weird. And that's the other thing is, like, I think Disney's really experimental with this, because no one has built a cinematic universe before. Certainly not at this scale.
Yeah.
And no one has then brought it back to the small screen and tried to, you know, keep it like, so like, they're kind of like figuring out all this stuff as they go. Mm-hmm. But it is puzzling. It is puzzling to cleanly just drop a whole ass episode of The Mandalorian right in the middle of Boba Fett season.
See, and I didn't even really mind it because the episode was better than the stuff I've been watching. It's just when, here's some of the things that were jarring. When the things that I thought should be happening, the things I thought should be happening in Book of Boba Fett were happening here in an episode of Book of Boba Fett that didn't feature Boba, like the scene where he goes in, this first scene, which I really love. He goes in, he finds this bounty who has disguised himself. He takes his head and he puts it in a sack. It's dripping blood. He steps into an elevator to return this bounty. He's getting looks. Like, this should be Boba Fett doing these things. But Boba Fett is out there wandering the desert and turning people into, like, atomizing people to where, like, there is no blood. It's all ridiculous. It's all, like, kid stuff. I expected more of this PG-13 level stuff in Book of Boba Fett.
I agree. This Klatoonian butcher shop scene with the Darksaber, I didn't think that they could do that on Disney shows.
Right?
Like, you know, I'm not expecting Kill Bill, the crazy 88 scene in Kill Bill, like going to black and white just so you can get away with all the blood. But yeah. I was expecting more of this stuff regularly through The Mandalorian and Boba Fett. And I don't know, like, is it like the F word where, like, you can only have the hero bisect a humanoid figure once per season, you know, just like you can only drop an F-bomb like once in a PG. I don't know what it is, but, like, you're right. Some of these things, and I remember, like, the season, the series premiere of Mandalorian had one of these scenes too, where it's like kind of hardcore. It's kind of, I thought that would be the tone of the whole series.
Yeah.
And it also kind of like, man, when Mando gets away from Grogu, as much as we all love Baby Yoda, I love Baby Yoda. I got Baby Yoda up on the shelf behind me.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like he's a more interesting character when he's not being the
babysitter.
Yeah. When he's not being Dadalorian. Uh-huh. That's a cool plot too, but it's, like, weird to see him kind of, like, torn between the two sides.
And it just puts into stark relief, like, the way that they changed Boba Fett's character just right off the bat. It wasn't even like, hey, this is the Boba you know, and we're going to transform him into a softer, gentler Boba. It was just right off the bat, he's a Boba who doesn't have the teeth for this anymore, you know, like, it's...
Yeah, he's like Cuddy from The Wire. He comes back and is like, I just don't got it in me anymore, man, but, you know.
Yeah, and he'll kill, like, a biker gang, but I expected more of this from Boba.
Not taking any shit. And the other thing is, Boba Fett was only cool, because he sat there like a badass, kind of somewhat intimidated Vader, and he looked cool.
Sure.
And I don't understand what the obsession is getting Boba to take his fucking helmet off as much as possible. And also, the robed Boba Fett is not as cool as the spacesuit armored Boba Fett. Yeah. It just isn't.
It's
kind of also dumb. Because the other thing is, like, part of what's made Boba cool is he had the same kind of, like, space-worn ragtag appearance of everything else in the Star Wars universe. He had a dent in his helmet, his paint was faded and chipped, and he looked like he'd been through some shit. And I don't understand why they give Boba Fett the fresh paint job, and he's still got the fucking dent in his Beskar helmet. Nothing. I liked Boba Fett's look when he was in the, you know, his robe, you know, his robed Tusken look.
Mm-hmm.
And I like his classic look, but, like, the fusion of the two with the glossy, well, not even glossy, the matte paint job, something about it just doesn't look as cool. And then when Mando shows up in his fucking gleaming, chroming Beskar and his fucking cool ass spacesuit and his, like, leg bandolier, and his, like, it's just like instantly, yes, that's the guy. This is Boba Fett perfected, and now we're going back to Boba Fett diluted.
I'm with you. That said, I did enjoy most of this episode, even if, you know, this was the return of the Mandalorian, literally.
Yeah, no, I saw someone on the internet describe this as, like, this episode is like the, watching this episode is like the living embodiment of the Vince McMahon gif of, like, you know, like, oh, boy, you're a man. And then, like, you just progressively get more and more blown away. It's like, because, like, and especially if you're one of the younger Star Wars fans, it's like super up into the prequels. Like, the last half of this fucking episode is just pure Phantom Menace porn.
Oh, totally.
You know, from the Naboo.
I knew what it was with the cloth draped over it. I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here.
I was like, why would... No, it's the... And that, and, like, even him trying to reclaim Wizard Kind of doing it. Like, I can see people thinking Wizard is unironically cool now, where it was just pure cringe when it first was deployed upon us.
Yeah.
Taking it in isolation, I like this episode. I really liked The Mandalorian. I thought it was very cool. And it's also efficiently kind of set. I know exactly what the next season of Mandalorian is going to be about.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
gotta go visit a baby, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta get that Grogu up in that droid socket.
Sure. With some Mandalorian armor. Yeah.
Hell gotta get him. Yeah, he's gonna be wearing Mandalorian chainmail over his Jedi robes, and he's gonna be in that little clear bubble doing cool shit. Yep.
Yeah.
And being cute.
Totally. I mean, Grogu is probably gonna end up with the Darksaber, right? I mean, they talked about like the fusion of Jedi and Mandalorian. He's going to get the armor. Yeah, he's going to get the Darksaber.
He's clearly the heir to the Mandalore throne,
right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Right. He needs another 100, 200 years of seasoning, man, but
you don't need midichlorians to be a Mandalorian. All you need is a way of life and some armor. That's a hell of a lot easier than trying to train a Jedi. So, especially
100%.
If you ain't got the midichlorians for it. All right, I think we should probably get into the recap now.
Let's do it.
But first, let's take a quick break. All right, we start off with Mando visiting a meatpacking plant to pick up a bounty, or to collect, I guess, the bounty so he can turn him in. And he's injured during the process by his own sword.
Darksaber seems a little hard to control. That's something that... It's kind of a bit of Star Wars lore. They're putting extra spin on the fact that there's something like with the Darksaber's mass or the way it channels crystal. I did some lore research into this because, again, I didn't watch the Clone Wars. But it's always been a thing of like, you know, a lightsaber is something that you could easily lop your own legs off with, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's a massless blade that cuts through anything like butter. And I kind of like the fact that this guy's trying to flash it out against a bunch of mooks and almost chops his own leg off.
Yeah.
That said, I don't like the design of these Clatoonians.
No.
They're a little bit Will Smith bright. Did you see that movie where he's busting orc drug dealers and shit? Like these guys looked... Yeah, it looks like the Mandalorian is going with Will Smith to bust a drug front in orc infested LA or whatever.
All right, well, not having seen that, I really liked the design of these guys.
Yeah, just space dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Space bulldogs.
Sure. It works for me.
I'm still not entirely sold on the Mandalorian's main combat style, which is essentially tanking tons of shots with their Beskar. Like, I always thought that should be a last resort, and it seems like it's just something, and maybe, I don't know, maybe that will be cool. I just never thought that these guys were like hulking, you know, war tanks. I thought they'd be more like agile and use their jetpack and their weapons and stuff, and it's always weird just to see him tink, 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 just get shot up like 1200 times and, you know, then come at it with a Darksaber. But
I mean, he's fighting a lot of guys. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Like, the whole vibe of this scene is just really good. I like from him walking through, you know, the plastic slats in the door or whatever, those floppy things. For some reason, they use those in meatpacking plants all the time.
I think they're called beef curtains.
No.
No, yeah. You only see them in meatpacking plants. They're called beef curtains. They separate the beef rooms.
Is it because they're easy to hose down? Is that why they use those in meat facilities?
You'd have to ask me. Oh, you know what? They're probably really good at retaining cool. Like, you know, better than an open doorway. And then you don't have to have your blood splattered hands that you go back and forth through. Yeah, I don't know. Someone that works in the meatpacking industry, let us know about these beef curtains.
Yeah, but...
Inquiring minds.
I just really like the vibe. Like, the way it's shot, like, we kind of get a tour of the place as Mando's walking through. We see all the people who later could challenge him. All the sharp, you know, implements, they're just hanging around. It feels like a very dangerous environment that he's walking into.
It did build up the tension. All the people that are side-eyeing this guy, and you know exactly why he's there and exactly who he's there for. And they're all, like you said, holding these vibro meat cleavers that could be real problems.
Yeah.
I liked it.
And then, yeah, the whole negotiation process with this guy was fun because Mando doesn't negotiate. You know, you can leave this in two ways, warm or cold.
Yeah, I love it. Harkening back to that.
Mm-hmm. And then Mando takes the head of his bounty and he turns it in. And they really wanted to stay. I was wondering if this would go anywhere this episode, but it doesn't, which I was kind of surprised by. I guess this is just showing that, like, Mando's in demand.
Mm-hmm. He's in demand.
Mm-hmm. and he follows some hidden symbols on the walls to the Mandalorian armor and the other Mando that survived, whose name, I guess, is Paz. I never learned this in The Mandalorian.
He's Beefy Boba in my notes, which
yes.
would have been confusing, except for the real Boba is slimmed down. The back has done him good.
True. They patch him up. He shows him the Darksaber, and then he joins them in rebuilding a bit. As they talk about, like, the Darksaber and Mandalore and the Knight of a Thousand Tears, there's a lot going on here. And the other thing about this whole scene as he's traveling is, damn, say what you want about the story, but Disney really pulled out the wallet for this one, because there's so much CG in this show, or in this episode in particular. Mm-hmm. It's wild, man. I mean, and it isn't just like, oh, it's a desert, let's put a skybox in the back on the volume and call it good. This is like ring worlds and cities being destroyed, planets being destroyed. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the first on-screen real-life, live-action depiction of a ring world.
You might be right. Certainly in Star Wars, I can't think of any. I just can't think of Star Wars using a ring world ever, even in the EU stuff.
Of course, ring worlds invented by Master Chief in Halo. I've never never seen before in science fiction.
Right.
But it's cool, and it's exactly
like, I have a thing to say about that. I don't know.
I mean, no, this was a Niven as fuck. He even had the like counter-rotating solar panels that are giving you the alternating day-night cycle.
Oh,
like,
did it? I didn't see it.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to observe. There's a couple buildings I thought was kind of weird because they built buildings so high, it looks like they're above the atmosphere, but I don't know, maybe those are spaceport or something. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. I would love to see more Ringworld fiction. I would love for HBO to option a Ringworld miniseries.
Sure.
It's an inherently cool concept. I would like to see more of it. But yeah, thank you to Star Wars for finally bringing a Ringworld installation into live-action cinema. I don't even think it's been in animated. Like, it's been in like video games.
Sure.
Totally. That's all I can think of.
Yeah. I was happy to see it. I think it's this type of structure is obviously not a stranger to Star Wars, like Death Stars, and there have been like Dyson spheres, I think, even, which, you know, Ringworld's about as close to a Dyson sphere as you get without full Dyson sphere.
It's a Dyson sphere on a budget.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It's an MRI slice of a Dyson sphere, yeah.
Sure. I don't know. It was really cool to see.
It's cool because I like this group of Mandalorians. Probably my favorite scene in The Mandalorian up until now is that scene where they all jetpack down to rescue them from Nevarro, I think was the planet.
Yeah.
And they kind of catch up and you find out that this is it. This is the last three Mandalorians of this tribe and they're trying to rebuild. And I like, you know, there's a lot of details. I don't know that we ever heard them refer to this as a covert, their cell as a covert, which I thought was like a cool kind of play on the idea of a convent, you know?
Oh, I was thinking like, a coven too. Yeah. Like a,
Coven.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got, but like a covert, and the fact that they're using like these infrared things or ultraviolet markings that only they can see to kind of like have it show where the den is, and she's setting up her, you know, metalsmithing shop. I thought that stuff was all good, and I know we talked about pre-podcast that some of this lore stuff was kind of review because we got a lot of the story from Bo-Katan, but I also like hearing the other side of like the anti-Bo-Katan, the sees her as kind of a reckless and kind of a feckless inexperienced leader who took, you know, was given things rather than had to be into taking them. I like the lore about there being a Jedi master who was also a Mandalorian that forged the Dark Star. or Darksaber. I thought that stuff was pretty cool. Sure. Also, like, you know, the further development of like the Mandalorian, who's starting to kind of trust a little bit into the New Republic's justice system, and you know, kind of like turning into a Law and Order guy, and probably the well-earned skepticism that the Armorer has towards that, kind of like, eh, we'll see if he gets justice. You know, he is played by Gus Fring. It seems like a more of a recurring type character, Mando, rather than someone she's read next season script.
Sure.
But there's, and also like the fact that like a Beskar spear is kind of an anathema to Mandalorians, because it's the only thing that can pierce their armor, and it's kind of like a symbolic threat to Mandalorians everywhere. I thought that was cool. And then, yeah, seeing the Knight of the Great Purge, the Knight of the Thousand Tears, seeing the KX security droids that were first seen in Solo, kind of like doing their Terminator thing.
Yeah, that was totally Terminator.
Marching through the ashes. And that's another kind of like dark gear that, like, you know, apocalyptic gear that I was hoping that these series would get to. But I thought that was pretty fucking cool. And how, like every other cult, like they happen to be sequestered on a moon, probably because the rest of Mandalorians thought they were a pain in the ass and kicked them out. And they saw that as like, ah, yes, this is our divine right. You know, we were the only Mandalorian spared because of our adherence to the way.
Oh, yeah. Got to change that narrative, man. How are you going to get followers if you don't change the narrative when it doesn't suit you?
Yeah, you know, ask the Shakers. Oh, you can't. They're all dead. it seems clear to me that they are forging like some kind of like Beskar chainmail for Grogu to wear. Very much like what Frodo, his mithril coat of arms that he wore in Lord of the Rings. I'm thinking it's going to be something like that. Something he can wear either over or under his Jedi robes.
Yeah, if it wasn't obvious when, you know, Mando's talking in this scene, they have the scene later where he's on the commercial flight and he looks at this little package that they give him and it's shaped exactly like Grogu's head. I'm like, oh, God, that's clever, but
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was so good.
It's cheesy, but okay.
Have we talked about the duel yet?
No, I was going to get to that. So Mando has the armor forge his Beskar spear into armor for Grogu, probably. They trained with the Darksaber for a while, but Mando's having trouble wielding it. And then Paz wants the sword, because I guess it's like a family thing. I don't know. One of his great ancestors made this thing. So they duel for it. And Paz loses, but the armor shames Mando for removing his helmet and tells him he can only be redeemed in the mines beneath Mandalore, which unfortunately have been destroyed. So then Mando leaves.
New quest.
Yes.
Redemption of the Mandalore. There's a lot. So like this to me sets up a lot of what I expect to see in future seasons of Mandalorian. Because I'm reading between the lines here and I'm seeing that like the conscious contrast of the Jedi philosophy, the Mandalorian philosophy, the Mandalorians are all about, you know, cohesion and unity of purpose and unquestioning support. The Jedi are all about, you know, not forming any kind of attachments, not even family or romantic attachments. It's often said that the opposite of crazy is crazy. And it seems to me that either the Mandalorian or Baby Yoda are destined to be that, the unity, like, you know, something Star Wars is still obsessed with is balance of the Force. We still haven't achieved it. Like through all the trilogies, light and dark have not been balanced. I wonder if they're telling if at Star Wars, they're like, you know what? We actually kind of need to think about what the fuck we're trying to do here. Big picture. Like, what is our end game? What is our Infinity Gauntlet shit here? And it might be bringing balance to the Force, like a nice decade-long project that you can do through like all kinds of different stories. And there could be side stories that don't have anything to do with it, but they might introduce characters to the sport. But like, I wonder if that's what we're starting to see the mission statement of like all this flailing and all the stuff that didn't really work and they're like, you know what? What is this about? And I think that might be it.
I mean, I think if there is a thesis for Star Wars, that's it. It's the balance to the Force thing. It's the light and dark balancing each other out.
Yeah.
You know, the good and bad coming to a stalemate, essentially. I definitely, like, as a viewer of the original Star Wars, that's the vibe I get of this entire universe. Yeah. So it seems the only logical destination for this series, or, you know, not just a series, but all of the series that Disney's going to put together.
Yeah. And like, so the armorer said you can only atone by bathing in the living waters beneath the mines of Mandalore. And then the Mandalorian says, but they've all been destroyed. And she says, that is the way. This mm-hmm. is the way. Some people have taken that to be in like a proverbial, like, well, you can't, you're fucked. You're forever cast out of the Mandalorian. It's kind of like Jesus. It's easier for a rich man to enter, to pull a camel through the needle of an eye than to get through the gates of heaven. But I actually think it's a challenge, because yeah. if she really believed the fact that he's no longer Mandalorian, why would she let him keep the Darksaber? Why would she let him keep his Beskar?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a challenge of like, you are the one that needs to go and reopen those mines. You are the one that has yeah. to go and restore Mandalore. You are the person. She wants him to be the leader that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they're going with.
Yeah, totally. I see that as, you know, a big mission statement for the next season, not just to find Grogu, but then to go try and redeem himself. And it's going to be interesting with, you know, Bo-Katan out there, who's like, not on the exact same page, right? As a Mandalorian, she's got different ideas. And it's not just going to be a battle for, you know, between the New Republic or whatever with Mando's heart and mind. It's also going to be a battle between different flavors of Mandalorian.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, I felt like Bo-Katan's people have kind of open contempt for these cultish Mandalorians, you know, see them as backwater, you know, fundamentalist. And in the way that, like, I don't think Jin has that kind of contempt towards the other side. Like, he's much more kind of, like, keep his own counsel and just kind of see what people do. Like, he's, you know, he came into this series really prejudiced against droids. And now he's, like, starting to get over... he's poised to be the one that can find that the sane middle mm-hmm. between all these different, you know, like Boba Fett's very much a Jedi, kind of like doesn't give a shit about the other Mandalorians. And then you got the Bo-Katan, who's very Mandalorian, but, you know, eschews all the old ways and doesn't respect them. I think that they are. It does seem like this guy's going to have a big focus in whatever that they're building in Star Wars.
Yeah.
What do you think of the duels? I thought the duels are pretty cool.
Uh huh. Yeah, it worked for me. The concept of the Darksaber, you know, getting heavier as you sort of wield it incorrectly or wield it against its own will or something. It's a little nebulous. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there.
I looked into the lore, and I guess the Darksaber has got some kind of specialized kyber crystal technology that really amps up the power, and it like pulls like in energy, and apparently, and I don't know if this actually makes strict sense, but sure. apparently it also pulls in the emotional energy of the user, and that can mm-hmm. like add weight to the blade that shouldn't be there. And you have to kind of like attain a little bit of a clear mind and a focus. And not try to fight, like the more distressed you get at the fact that the blade's getting heavier, the worse it's going to get.
It's like Luke with the training droid, right?
Yeah.
Or shooting at him and he's trying to block those shots. Yeah. You got to open yourself up to what
you got
to
let go and let Grogu. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then the kind of like also it's like when he was fighting Chunky Boba, like when he got bested, it's almost like the fight got easier for him because he kind of wants to be that nimble guy going in with the vibro blade. And now the big guy who's already slow and bulky is even slower
yeah.
with this thing and is able to easily defeat him. Also, the stakes. I like the fact that they like this is like a Mortal Kombat stage. Where it's essentially uh-huh. you're just over the abyss of space and we already saw him fall off once and save himself the backpack. Oh, now they're putting the jetpacks aside. I thought that was a pretty nicely staged fight. Uh-huh. Pretty exciting.
All right. Mando boards a commercial flight after checking his weapons at the door. When he lands, all his weapons are there. Nothing to fear. Nothing to fear, Mando.
Mando flying coach. Oh boy.
Yes. I loved seeing how untenable being a bounty hunter is when you have to fly coach. It's like
really bad.
What you're gonna take your bloody stump neck head on this flight yeah. and sit it next to this the baby Rodian or something. Like,
good luck getting that through customs, you right? know? What is this fluid leaking?
Yeah, you just check it. They'll check anything.
Have you ever been on Star Tours?
No.
Okay, I haven't either, because I've never been to Disney World. But apparently the little droid unit that's checking his weapons and stuff is the little pilot droid in all the Star Tour Disney attractions.
Huh, okay. That's kind of cool.
It is cool that they're bringing, like, yeah, this would be essentially a Star Wars tour in real life. They're boarding this, like, commercial mm-hmm. craft, and I thought that was kind of cool. There's a lot of people that are big theme park heads, like Jenny Nicholson, were really squeeing about it. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, they've got this new thing they're doing at Disney. I don't know how successful it's been with the pandemic and everything. I don't even know if it started yet, but like, it's that live experience, like Star Wars experience thing where you pay like $4,000 a night or something. And
yeah,
you just become a Star Wars character in Star Wars.
I'm very curious to see the first few reviews, because I think it's starting to they're starting to book reservations this year. I think people are actually going this year. Speaking of Jenny Nicholson, I think she's got a February thing where she's going to go and film a bunch of stuff and do a review of it. But I got a healthy degree of skepticism that A, it's going to be too cool, and B, it's going to be worth the price that you have to pay to get it. Like, it's very Jurassic Parky, where it's like, yeah, if you're a multimillionaire kid, it's going to be a fucking hoot. But mm-hmm. if not, then, you know, keep playing Jedi Knight, kid.
For sure. The thing that struck me is they make him check all these weapons, right? And I'm thinking, okay, he's pulling out his pocket knife. He's you know, dumping his drinks, because you're not allowed to take any whatever on board.
Only 3.5 ounces of Grogu that you can bring on.
Right? I can't take a fucking cigarette lighter on a plane, and Mando could take a jetpack.
I couldn't believe he walks in with that jetpack in, too. It's like, come on, you can do some. I've seen him remote control that thing, kill people with it. Like,
right? It was wild. But yeah.
It's like you can't take Gandalf's walking staff, you can't take a Mandalorian's flying pack. Disabled, right. they're considered disabled without it.
So then Mando's mechanic, where we just kind of cut to her, Peli Motto. Mm-hmm. She's almost eaten by a creature, but Mando shows up just in time to save her.
Oh, by the way, Jawa fucker, that's her nickname from now on. There's kind of something wrong with that. I don't know. Those beady orange eyes.
Look, they can give consent. It's fine. They're sentient. They're furry.
Oh, I'm not saying it's immoral. I'm just saying it's just gross. Yeah.
Okay.
Filthy desert
buggers.
Well,
now I know your opinion on Jawa. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I reserve the right to be racist towards Jawas and only Jawas. They know what they did.
She shows him the new ship she found for him, which turns out to be an N1 fighter. And if you don't recognize the name and you haven't seen this episode and you're listening to this podcast for some reason, it's a Naboo starfighter. Is what mm-hmm. I think of it as. She talks him into helping her repair it, and they get to it with a big old montage.
Okay, so this is a cool idea. I like the idea of Mando with a starfighter. This isn't a terribly impractical vehicle for a bounty hunter, and I can't believe he didn't say that. Like, yeah, it's cool, right? It's fast, it's well-armed, and it's all that, but where the hell am I going to put my prisoners?
Where's the cargo hold?
I had a carbon freezing unit in the old deal, man.
Where's like, the shitter?
Yeah.
I had a shitter in my last ship. Now, I got to stop at a gas station?
I'm glad I can go to hyperspace. But on the other hand, I'm going to sit on a 5-gallon bucket, I guess, because.
But there's not room because the canopy's so low. I don't know.
It makes me wonder if he's going to get like some kind of like Bebop type ship from Cowboy Bebop that will kind of like that big freighter that Han Solo was flying around in the sequels.
He already had the Bebop. Like, the Razor Crest was essentially the Bebop.
Kinda, but what I'm going as like something that can hold. Like, he'll have like, you know, like a mothership that he can dock this thing with.
Gotcha. Like, this will be Spike's personal ship or whatever, and then he'll just store it on his,
you know what, just give him the Queen Amidala's starship. Sure, why not?
Yeah, that thing, it is that the one where they was all like super reflective, like his armor.
Yeah, it looks like just chromed out SR-71 Blackbird,
and they do that to this one, right? They get out the sanders and or the polishers, and they just mm-hmm. chrome the hell out of this thing, and it looks cool. It matches his armor, but yeah, you're not using this for bounty hunters, which to me says this is a one and done go find Grogu ship, right?
Like, yeah.
As soon as he finds baby Grogu and they put baby Grogu in the droid slot, mm-hmm. they're just going to jettison the ship because he can't do bounty hunter missions with this. Mm-hmm. Or maybe Mando's done with bounty missions.
I wonder that,
is that possible?
Too. It could be that he's meant for bigger things. Like he's going to go full on like unifying the tribes of Mandalore and, yeah. you know, but like this is essentially like your buddy who flunked out of college and hasn't got his and he's driving Uber. That's mm-hmm. Mandalorian's bounty hunter. You know, it's like that's what they're doing when they're down on their luck and they're trying to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
Because this isn't a great, it is a great him and Grogu bombing around the galaxy yeah. trying to do shit. Ship, it's not really useful for anything else.
I think this is like the kind of hot rod scene you should have had if you wanted hot rods. Fuck these moped,
that's
biker
what I'm
gangs.
Saying yeah
this was cool.
Boba Fett's got a ride with the fucking Vespa squad where Mandalorian like rolls up in his like, you know, supercharged,
right, where the freaking rebels aren't even looking to chase him because they know they can't catch him in X-Wings.
Yeah. They can divert all the shields and all the turbo lasers into the engines that they want. They still can't get as fast as he's got with his magic go fast button.
Right.
I mean, this is like Knight Rider. Like he's got a super pursuit button that he can push now. But it's cool. And I like, you know, that American Graffiti aesthetic when they fire that thing right. up and like the, you can see this like fucking supercharger like rattling around because its engine mount can't even contain it.
Yeah, it's like Dom Toretto's
exactly.
car in Fast Furious.
Yeah, he's got a Nas tank he's going to inject it to. I also really like Amy Sedaris playing this Mato character. She's talking about dating Jawas, and the Jawas in the background, mm-hmm. like in the conversation, they're like, hey, te wonga wonga? And she's like, nah, I'm busy. Like, because the Jawas are like, so what's up? You know? We hear you date. Here you got the Jawa, hot for the Jawa.
Not anymore. She learned her lesson, apparently. Very furry. Mm,
very
She's
furry.
Great, man. I love her in this show. Amy Sedaris is...
Did they do more to her this? Because I don't remember her not having eyebrows.
Maybe they burned her eyebrows off, but I'm not sure.
Because she's looking even more kind of not Sedaris-like.
Yes.
Which I think is pretty cool. It's mm-hmm. She's a great comic relief character, getting like half eaten by this shop rat.
Yeah. Jeez.
And she's got all the stupid droids. Also, I like seeing a gonk power droid actually powering something.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I've never seen him do anything but just kind of walk around in the background, gonk, gonk, gonk. And now they're actually being the living car jump battery that they're supposed to be. That's pretty cool.
Oh, the other thing that, yeah, you talked about like episode one fans just having their minds blown in this scene and jumping out of their seats and cheering. This is the, when he takes us out for a spin, this is the exact route that Anakin takes on his pod race, right?
Did you know that was actually Beggar's Canyon?
I did not. I never knew that episode one scene went through Beggar's Canyon.
I wonder if this is something that they, because like I don't remember them saying that the Bunta Eve race went through Beggar's Canyon, but it's unmistakably the same thing. You even see if you look real close, there's that wreckage of the off ramp that Anakin plowed through. So yeah, it's canonically cool. Beggar. This is where Luke practicing bullseyed swamp rats. You know,
it's T-16 Skyhopper. Yeah, hell yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. It was cool to see that.
Did you notice that the cryogenically dense combustion booster that the Jawas stole from him, that like that little shaft that they cut out of the pipe cruiser?
Oh,
that's
the same thing that
Luke and Han are trying to brace the compactors with.
So, I did. That was awesome.
Yeah. Canonically, this is space junk that this Jawas didn't junk it. They actually are the kind of guys that would, you know, steal your catalytic converter. Silver inside of it.
Which, why not?
Super cool.
Yeah. I imagine half the shit on Tatooine is just like Star Destroyers shitting onto the planet. It's like, we don't need this stuff. Let's just jettison it onto Tatooine.
Yeah, what if there's like fleets that just kind of like wait for, you know, like ships of junkers that just kind of wait for the fleets to go into hyperspace? Because like, look at all the cryogenic booster rods are throwing away. And You look at some of the garbage that comes out of that Star Destroyer and how big it is. Like, my God, there must be. There's got to be. If they're paying starving begging girls to go out in the Tatooine and pull shit off a wrecked TIE fighter,
Yeah.
It must be some pretty good space shit to sort through.
Mando, like I said, takes this N1 up for a test flight. It doesn't have a name. I wish they would have given it a name in this scene. And he gets pulled over by X-Wings. When things get dicey, he steps on the gas and leaves him in the dust. We kind of already talked about that. But if you don't remember, this is the guy from The Mandalorian. He was trying to get, what's her name? Shit. Kara?
Yeah, Dune.
Uh-huh. Cara Dune to join the New Republic as well. Last season of The Mandalorian.
Did you know this? That the other X-Wing pilot, the new guy, he was the guy that played Mark Hamill's body double from the season 2 Mando finale.
Oh, okay. Nice.
You can kind of see it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they gave him a whole new digital face, but you can definitely kind of see it.
No, this totally felt like old school Star Wars in a lot of places. Like when they get to the substrata of the ring world, I was very much like, this is Star Wars. Just that's the whole vibe like of that.
The Mandalorian's starting to feel like the linchpin, the Iron Man of this thing, that like everything's going to flow through, because like this guy showing up is kind of like Nick Fury at the end of Iron Man. Like, hey, we got this project we're putting together. It's called the Avengers. Like, clearly he's going to be tapped by the New Republic to do some big galaxy unifying things. Or at least that's what I'm seeing them putting down here.
Yeah. And I love, you got the body double of Luke here in this cockpit, and in the other cockpit you've got a dude who at least shape wise reminds me of like a Jack Porkins, right?
He's a little porky. Yeah, sure.
You just got the bigger X-Wing pilot who you think like barely kind of fits in the cockpit of this thing.
Yeah, they got to get the cockpit stretcher out for him.
Yeah. Feels that, I don't know why specifically that feels very Star Wars to me, but like all the different shapes and sizes of pilots feels Star Wars.
I think that's the deal, is like in the old trilogy, and they kind of got in the way of this in the new stuff, but like people were just dudes, man. Like once you got past the main cast, they were just like grabbing dudes off the streets of London, throwing them in a cockpit, and they were not movie stars. They didn't have the, like, you know, like you look at the background characters in Hoth, they just look like they're all farm boys that have been pushed into action.
Uh-huh.
You got fucking Cliff Clavin from Cheers as one of their leaders in Hoth, for God's sakes. I'll just take anybody.
Yeah. I know. I like the scene. And then he lands back at the space dock here, and Finnick is waiting for him, and she tries to hire him to work for Boba. He agrees, but doesn't want payment, and he also has to visit a little friend first.
Makes me wonder if we're going to see Mandalorian back for the, like, at the season finale of the Book of Boba, or are we going to rejoin him in season 3 of Mandalorian on the hunt for Grogu, and then they'll do Boba Fett will take over his show for an episode to kind of bring the
two back
together.
That's probably where we're headed. Yeah.
Seems to me too, yeah.
I feel like everything that's going to happen in season 3 of The Mandalorian is going to happen off screen here, and then, yeah, we will have to catch up to what we see at the end of this season of Book of Boba Fett in the next season of Mandalorian.
Yeah, 100%. All right, well, that's the end of the episode, but we do have some feedback to cover. If you'd like to send us feedback, it's tribe@baldmove.com, and we'll open that feedback right after this quick break. Okay, coming back, it's time to look into our mailbag, Jim. tribe@baldmove.com is how you send in that stuff. First up, Aaron from Buffalo. Love the name. Hey guys, really enjoying your coverage of Book of Boba Fett, and I feel very similarly to you about the first 4 episodes. They feel very underwhelming and not the tone that I would expect from a show about Boba Fett. All the people involved in the show have been hyping up the last 3 episodes in interviews, so I'm holding out hope. I can see why this last episode, if it's the first of the 2-3 hyped episodes, this is promising. Maybe now that Boba's fully healed, he can be the badass we all knew him as, but I'm not going to hold my breath too much on that front. The line from Finnick about hiring muscle has me excited to possibly see Boba hire the old gang like Bosk and Dengar. Oh!
Sure.
And maybe some other bounty hunters from the Legends like we saw at the Black Chrysanthemum. The first four episodes have been largely set up, like a lot of the cast has said, then the final three better have a hell of a payoff. Thanks for the great podcast and keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Aaron. Man, yeah, you get like Bossk and Dengar and IG-88 and Forlom and all the guys, but all the gang back together. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, everybody you see on Vader's capital ship.
Yeah, all the Outer Rim bounty hunters. Mm-hmm. And you got Coin, they're amoral. Like, that's exactly the kind of Shades of Grey stuff that I would expect Boba Fett to get up to. But it's like, man, what are they going to do in the last two episodes? Take down the Pike Syndicate? It seems like it'll be too easy. And, like, assemble the team?
Yeah, this is the first of those. That's a turn in the right direction for me. It's just weird that it comes without Boba Fett.
And since, like, you know, like, I got excited when, you know, they're doing the previously on at Phoenix. Like, if you got credit, I can get you muscle. And then you see the silhouette of the Mandalorian. I'm like, fuck, yes, this is amazing. But now that the Mando said he's denied the call to adventure and it's like, yeah, I got to go pick up my kid from school. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because how do they wrap up the Book of Boba in two episodes? Like, in my mind, they have to defeat the Pike Syndicate. And that was front and center in this episode. Mato's complaining about it. Mando's aware of them. That kind of, you know, the Jawas might have started a turf war with them. I don't. But Mando or the Boba Fett doesn't still have any muscle. It would take a whole episode to kind of get your hands around the kind of muscle it seems like he'd need. And then you got one episode of just maybe that works out. We'll see. Or maybe they'll leave it half finished.
It depends on how big the Pike Syndicate is, how influential. I don't have a clear picture about the Pike Syndicate's power yet.
I know they've been so powerful spies. That even the legit, like, even the New Republic is intimidated by them, which we kind of got a little last that, like, the New Republic is trying to bring government, effective government, to the Outer Rim, but they haven't quite got there, so.
Yeah, I don't think you can defeat them in two episodes. Maybe it's going to be a longer arc.
Next up, we got Brent from San Diego, who is digging the Book of Boba Fett. Says, hey guys, longtime bald mover, loving yet another damn podcast. I just giggle every time the mods hop up on their space Vespas and presumably pump tunes by the jam, maybe run home and watch Quadrophenia 2 in their spare time. Just something where I can say, I see what you did there, Favreau. I don't get any of these references.
I don't either, man.
These must be younger millennial references that I don't get. Something I also dig is some of Rodriguez's touches from his unfairly maligned Alita Battle Angel. Feels like the mod's look is definitely borrowed heavily from that project. And while they may seem out of place in Tatooine, the aesthetics are definitely cool. Hope they just don't become YA joke characters, but we'll see. I would say, Rodriguez, settle down. Keep your Alita Battle Angel in your back pocket for when it's appropriate. Don't try to force the shiny Tokyo neon aesthetic on Tatooine.
Yeah.
Because this is not Tokyo, man.
No.
This is not even Okinawa. This is slimy mud hole, scum, wretched scum, high villainy kind of, you know, thing.
Yeah.
Murder Bear, I apologize if you brought this up before, but it's occurred to me that when Boba climbed his way out of the Sarlacc pit, why wasn't his first move after getting back on his feet to go after Han Solo, a.k.a. the dude that knocked him into the Sarlacc pit in the first place?
Needs his armor for that, right? Needs his armor.
But he's not even like... He comes out with a hard-on for Bib Fortuna.
Yeah.
Not like, Solo! I hear what Murder Bear is saying here. He says, I truly wonder if Favs made this show because he always thought that Boba was overhyped and is trying to show how dumb and uncool he really is because, man, just fumble after fumble with this guy. He screws up with almost every move. I'm sure there'll be a redemption at the end, and I'm hoping that this show will look better once it's all said and done, but it's kind of rough right now. Unfortunately, he's getting to that point where the more things bug me, the more nitpicky I start to get, and it all starts falling apart. Your suspension of disbelief is starting to fail.
Yep.
You know, just like the N1 starfighter, who apparently doesn't have landing gear. They just float all the time. Boy, that shiny thing gets all fucked up when those anti-grav things fail. It just crashes unceremoniously to the desert, and you start noticing all the nicks and the grime and the dents.
Real Flight of the Navigator vibe going on.
And man, Boba, when he finally got his arm, do you remember how fucking badass that was when he wades into those stormtroopers and starts launching knee rockets and shit at them? And, you know, The cool guys don't look at Explosion Boba. What happened to that Boba Fett? Boba Fett drops 25 pounds and his entire personality, apparently.
Yeah, lost the taste for it somewhere along the way.
Murder Barrel says, I also kind of thought him taking Finnick and replacing her guts with the modification was kind of not cool. Sure, it's a life-saving measure, but he presumably did not know this woman and just picked her unconscious body up and forced these modifications on her without her consent.
Well, she doesn't like it. She can put a bullet in her head and go back to hell it was, I guess.
See, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think this is like finding an unconscious woman and getting her tattooed. Like, this is right. This is exactly the same thing as Tony Stark's cave deal. An Iron Man, where this doctor finds him and hooks him up to his heart electromagnet, because otherwise he's going to die. Like, yeah. Tony did not ask to be stuck to this thing and drag around car batteries in a cave, but if he doesn't like it, he can disconnect it and let the shrapnel destroy his heart. Uh-huh. Or it's like a Good Samaritan type of law. Like, you know, if I find you unconscious on the pavement, even if I don't have the proper training for it and you're not breathing, anything that I do as far as getting, if I break your ribs or crack your sternum, like, I'm cool because I'm trying to save your life. And if everyone just stood and watched you die. So, like, I get what you're saying about the consent thing, but I think it's very rare that you're going to go wrong violating someone's consent to save their life. You know, we even go through this in our former lives as Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, it's kind of understood that, especially with children in the cult, that, like, if they needed blood, no matter what the parents said, the doctors, they have those forms ready to go. Mm-hmm. Like, keep them warmed up. Oh, you got a religious objection to this life-saving treatment for this minor child? Oh, well, I have this stack of forms and triplicates signed by every judge in the state ready to go to override your bullshit parental consent. So, like, sometimes, you know, principle of saving a life takes precedence over that kind of stuff. Well, he's like, it also feels like him leveraging that to her owing him one. It's like, that's a little bit murkier, like, you know, sure, if you present someone with a bill, but, like, shit, that's what we do, right?
We do it, and nobody likes it, and we think it's unjust.
Let me tell you, if you pass out on a sidewalk, and an ambulance comes and picks you up, takes you to hospital, you will owe them one, let me tell you.
You absolutely will, and, you might want to disconnect those cables afterward.
you might, death might be preferable. Let's move on to Brent says, how much time and money do you think was spent on Mando season 3? Episode 5 in comparison to the first 4 episodes.
It seems like a lot more.
It does. And I know there's some things, like, you know, we take for granted, like the Rancor. Like, I really, like, that's a pretty cool special effect, but it didn't even register as one. It's like, well, that's just a Rancor.
Uh-huh. Because I know it was a puppet in the original, and my brain just connected that dot. Instead of saying, they made this thing CG and it took a lot of effort and time and money.
I still think it was probably a little prosthetic and a little puppetry especially when they're really close. But, like, that stuff, you know, like, but the ring, I get it. The ring world just looks like $1 million.
Oh, you know?
It just looks so much better than anything we've seen from The Mandalorian and, like, or from Boba Fett. And, you know, we've seen a lot of cool things in Boba Fett, but it's overshadowed by also, like, the really obviously shitty CG of, like, the mod guys and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Brent continues, I thought the episode is amazing with the brand new Halo Ring City, new and unique aliens. The first 50 minutes have me in awe, and then we even get to see a Mandalore flashback scene. But what the heck is it doing in the middle of a Boba Fett show? Love to know how they planned this. It seems like the Book of Boba was conceived midway through Mando season 2 and thrown into production to give us an appetizer for Mando season 3. I think that's right. I think you cracked the code. That's exactly right. Boba Fett's going nowhere in his own story. Meanwhile, we've seen minor characters like, I can't remember. Kui, it's the, the Ugnaught character from the first season of Mandalorian. Kuil?
Oh, I...
Kuil? He spelled it correctly, but it does not help me because it's Q-U-I-I-I-L.
Sure. Kuil sounds good.
And Mayfeld complete great character arcs in less than 10 minutes on screen. The unbalanced stories from the same production crew is bizarre. It's what happens when you're ready fire aiming an entire...
Yeah.
Cinematic universe, and it is not at all what they did on Marvel. And now,
I know,
to their credit, they have, I think they've 3 years into this project, they're like starting to be like, you know what, we need to stop. We need to find our Kevin Feige. We need to, you know, I guess it's Dave Filoni. We need to get him together, and they need to just like fucking plan out the next 10 years and we can start executing on this stuff. There's a reason they canceled the next trilogy, and they're trying, you know, they're not like DC where they're just like, fuck it, we'll just keep going. But
they should have done this from the start. They had no, there was no time pressure on Star Wars. Star Wars has been around for decades. They didn't have to go in there and hire three different directors to do three different movies that were wildly different movies. It's a real shame because, like, I don't have the affinity for the MCU stuff because I didn't read a lot of comic books growing up. Mm-hmm. What I did have the affinity for was Star Wars, and they've just, man, they botched
it. You prefer it be the other way around.
I would love for them to fuck up the Avengers and half-ass that and then come in with the coherent strategy for Star Wars, but
can I confess, the world I live in. Yeah. As much of a Marvel fan as I love, and as much as I've loved the last 10 years of Marvel stuff, Star Wars is the number one apex childhood fantasy for me. And right. I would use my monkey paw on that. Like, make Marvel suck and Star Wars awesome. I think you could take them both, being awesome, but if you had to pick one. I think you can lay this, and I don't understand what, but I think you can lay the entire failure of this at Kathleen Kennedy's feet. Like, she is the one that has called all the shots from the beginning. She's still the fucking executive producer over everything, and I think she's done a shitty job of it. I think a woman can run a Star Wars universe. I just don't think this woman can run a Star Wars universe. And it's baffling to me how many missteps. Like, it's tough when you've got $500 million missteps, you know, $700 million missteps under your belt, because just like on the DC side, everyone's like, this Superman sucked. Yeah, well, it made $500 million worldwide, so suck it.
Right.
Her first 5 years or so in this experiment have not made her management look very good. David R. says, as I was first a bit thrown off when I realized this would be a full-blown Mandalorian episode. The pace was slow at the beginning, extended shots of Mando limping didn't help, and I wasn't sure this episode where this episode was heading. I also find the Mandalorian code profoundly stupid. Hey, we're a decimated group down to only a few of us, but first you two fight, possibly to the death, over the laser sword that no one seems to use all that well or understand. And oh, since you took your mask off that one time, get the hell out of here, and don't come back until you've completed some arbitrary time-consuming quest. I don't get it. The mythology doesn't make sense and just makes the Mandalorians look stupid. Welcome to religious fundamentalism.
Yep.
When you decide a priori that this is the right way for the universe to be, and if that worldview fails, you just got to try harder and have more faith, man.
Yeah, no, this is the way. And
that sounds like apostate reasoning, to be honest, David. To be perfectly honest, it sounds like apostasy, what you're saying.
We're seeing the one branch of Mandalorian culture that, what, it was the one in a million that didn't die out entirely.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many other Mandalorians who were probably like, you know, this is the way, this is the way, this is the way. I'm dead.
Yeah.
And they were just snuffed out entirely. So we're seeing like the one in a million luck here.
Yeah, imagine like if Scientologists were out to sea in their sea cruiser with their million-year contracts, and, you know, asteroids hit every landmass, and they were the only ones left.
Uh-huh.
Aliens land a million years later and be like, man, fucking humans are fucked up. Well, and that's what's kind of happened. Like, what I understand is, like, this Mandalorian cult got banished to a moon.
Yeah.
And only the insane or incredibly lucky or happen to be off the planet Mandalorian survive. So, like, you really put a lot of pressure on that population. And then they think it's, of course, because that happened, it's divine right. So why would they ever consider choosing? But it's frustrating. It should be frustrating to see people not thinking things through like that.
Yeah, but I also respect the conviction, you know? It's like, well, this is the thing that we believe in. We believe in it so strongly that we're willing to make sacrifices for that belief. That's fine.
That conviction, properly harnessed, can do great things.
Totally.
You know, also, like, it's when it's chained to an ignoble purpose. Oof.
Yeah.
However, as the episode progressed, Dave continues, I really ended up liking it. The special effects /CGI felt and looked like Star Wars, and the humor worked out really well. Mando going through space TSA was hilarious. Amy Sedaris speaking and having dated a Jawa was great, and the space cops and X-Wings not wanting to give chase to Mando or file a report because of the paperwork gave me a good laugh. Oh, and Mando's hand-built ship actually looked like something that would be pieced together via scrap, unlike the techno-punk gang on the neon hover Vespas.
Yes.
Now excited to see Mando back with Boba and see where their team up leads us. Possibly seeing Grogu in a little Mandalorian armor has amazing potential for hilarity or disaster. I can't wait. Hey, everyone thought Yoda fighting with a lightsaber would be fucking stupid until episode 2 came around. Yeah. And it was kind of awesome.
I agree. I didn't hate that fight.
It is ridiculous in every sense of the word, but it's also fucking cool. So, like, I'm not going to count the little green. Judge him by his size. I will not.
Yeah. I expect Grogu to just, like, try and eat those rings, right? He's just going to be, like, little lifesavers to him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's like that little, what's that little beast from Futurama that eats matter and craps
Nibbler,
out? Nibbler, yes! He's going to be the Nibbler. He's going to eat Beskar and crap out antimatter or something.
Yep.
Lebo says, well, I had to pause the episode 3 minutes in and do a double take. I thought I'd clicked on a Mando episode by mistake, but was happy to catch up with everyone's favorite space Mormon. This episode got back to what I expect from the show. Like y'all say, if Pixar can ride the line between adult kid entertainment so well, why not Star Wars? It's all under the same mouse's house. That new ship was gorgeous. At first, I got Podracer vibes, and I was thinking about those terrible space Vespas, which made me a little nervous. But the end result was something quite beautiful and felt like Star Wars. I do wonder where he will store his captured bounties, warm and cold alike. The ship doesn't seem to have much in cargo or storage space. Maybe a roof rack is in order. But I do know one thing. If that little bubble where the R2 unit would sit isn't occupied by a chainmail wearing Grogu by next episode, I will be shocked.
Yep.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure where they're going for it. I do wonder if there is some kind, because she mentioned you can do hyperspace without docking in a ring, and we've seen starfighters dock with other structures too. I wonder if, like, the another possible way for this to go is to modify one of those to be like a cargo hold / living quarters that he can ditch to, like, you know, go ballistic if he needs to.
Sure, I could see it.
They also didn't talk about how, like, how modified the guns look on this thing, because, like, the old Naboo fighters had those, like, little tiny, like, holes at the, but this thing looks like 50 cal machine guns that they've, like, with big barrel shrouds and shit. So it's like,
yeah,
I don't think the engines are going to be the only thing overpowered on this thing. Show seems to be setting up for what could be some really great deliverables, an epic battle of Fett on his Rancor, Mando and Jedi Grogu and their new ambassadorship, maybe a Tusken Raider piggybacking on a Wookiee. Now this is pod racing. Then for the icing on the cake, watching Team Vespa take all the casualties of the battle, get those space hipsters some red shirts, boys. Maybe even make some brown pants because shit's going to go down. I would love, that would actually be hilarious if, like, they have this very cool battle and all of the mods end up taking all of the casualties because,
yeah.
Do any of them have names? Everyone you've named that's cool has a name. All the mods are just collectively known as the mods. Yep. So mod squad out, all the cool guys in. Let's move on to Steve J. Says, I want us all to live in an alternate reality where this episode is season 3 premiere of The Mandalorian. In the second episode of this fictional reality, Boba Fett recounts to Din Djarin his escape from the Sarlacc pit and his time with the Tuskens. This would be the first 4 episodes of the Boba Fett series condensed into one 25-minute thrilling and heartfelt flashback instead of the 2 hours of flashbacks that we did get. The third episode, Boba lays out a situation to Mando and what he's trying to accomplish on Tatooine and the power vacuum created by Jabba's death. They go about doing whatever it is they would have done in Boba Fett's episode 6 and 7, also condensed in one action-packed episode. This gives Mando a cool little side mission for a couple episodes, keeps Boba Fett from turning into whatever he seems to be now, and leaves everybody wanting to see the continuing adventures of everybody involved. I agree. I don't know why the shit went down the way it did. I don't know why they decided. I will say that when, you know, he threw Bib Fortuna off his throne last year and the Book of Boba title card came up, I was fucking pumped to see it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you and I were both like, Jesus, this is going to be so fucking cool.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of shocking how boring they've made Boba Fett.
Yeah, that end scene had a vibe to it, man. That was, like, intense. And then you cut back to episode one and it's like, yeah, not doing it.
Yeah, Boba Fett should not be outshone in his own. Like, I feel like Boba Fett kind of outshone the Mandalorian last year when he showed up because we just all were so fucking ready for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like the Mandalorian, but I think the Mandalorian's just a new cool guy in the universe. And he's just taking it from Boba now. Will says, I'm really enjoying the Mando Boba slash Halo crossover episode. I'm also loving all the Darksaber Mandalorian lore we seem to be getting. It looks like Jon Favreau wrote this episode and he was actually part of the original Clone Wars series arc that dove into the Darksaber in ancient Mandalorian lore, where he voiced Pre Vizsla, one of the wielders of the Darksaber. I think it's the guy that forged it. So you have to think that he has some firsthand knowledge from George Lucas and Dave Filoni on the Mandalorians. Oh, I'm sure. Dave have gone into a cave somewhere and talked about it. I appreciate y'all's thoughts on Din Djarin's devotion to the radical sect of Mandalorians. After last season of The Mandalorian, it was looking like he was set to leave the radicals and join up with the more moderate ranks of the Mandos. And now it seems like he's conflicted with his devotion to the radical beliefs, but can't yet bring himself to turn away from those beliefs.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. That was one of the points we made last year that would be very unrealistic for this guy to just be like, oh, I got a different viewpoint. Bloop. I'm just going to completely like raise from infancy.
Yeah.
And owes a life debt to these people. It's going to be a process. And I'm glad they kind of pump the brakes and shows that this is this disillusionment and synthesis of new ways is going to take time.
Yeah, it's probably going to come through Grogu, honestly. Like that's kind of his outroad, I don't know, from this whole way of thinking. Just following Grogu around is going to expose him to a lot of different ideas and viewpoints, and he'll have to struggle with it, but we'll see where he ends up.
Craig has some perspective for someone who is not as steep into the Star Wars universe. It's more of a casual watcher. It says, I've enjoyed the show so far. Wouldn't say it's fantastic. I agree with a lot of your points. The biggest one being how defanged and quite frankly dumb in some spots Boba has been opposed to how we first saw his comeback in The Mandalorian when he kicked ass. This latest episode is going to highlight the deficiencies a lot more than normal because the best episode of Book of Boba Fett so far didn't even have him in it. Literally just an episode of The Mandalorian. I did like how they fused the Book of Boba's shitty music with The Mandalorian's awesome one too. Like they kind of wove that through, especially in the final credits. I have faith the last two episodes will bring the series to a good climax like The Mandalorian seasons do. As for us not getting any more of Boba in his own series, I would say no. Do you think we'll get more Boba?
Oh, totally. Yeah. This is not the path forward for this show. We're going back to Boba immediately next episode, I think.
And I also think that, like, it's very modern Disney storytelling to blur the lines. Like, what is an Avenger film and what's a Captain America film?
Sure. What's a Spider-Man film and what's an Avengers
What's an Avengers film? What's a Guardian of the Galaxy? Exactly. Like all that stuff kind of, and I think you're going to see the exact same thing with the Ahsoka series, with the Mando series, the Boba Fett series, with his, I don't know how they'll do that with the Obi-Wan series. Maybe that can be a standalone thing that he can just do weird shit with.
Yeah.
But yeah. Chris DiCapo.
It would be hard, right? Because they're not happening in the same time period. How old is Obi-Wan in that? I don't even know.
He looks like he's about 20 years older than he was in the Clone Wars. So like,
okay, so
but not. Like, but that's weird because like that means he would look like Alec Guinness, and we know he doesn't. Maybe they'll make him up to look like that. I guess he could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even mind if he doesn't. I'll just know it's the same character, right? He played the young Obi-Wan. He plays like a middle-aged Obi-Wan.
Like his adventures conclude pre-Battle of Yavin. Like he's just dead. Like he could be a Force ghost, but so they got to set it like
he's not going to blend too well in with this crowd.
Yeah, so there's going to be him wandering in Tatooine. Of course, a lot of shit going down at Tatooine. Seems like Tatooine's like the center of the universe suddenly. So I don't know, maybe they will work in some kind of... But yeah, this is all happening 5 years after.
Yeah, you can't flash back like...
Return of the Jedi.
What, Mandalorian's going to be a kid again? Interacting with Obi-Wan on Tatooine?
Run around a teenage Clone Wars era, Boba Fett and Bo-Katan. I don't know if I like that.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I hope they do something just kind of standalone and weird with it. you know.
Sure.
Chris DiCapo says, WTF, what the Fett? So what show are we watching here? I thought this was a Boba Fett show, and this week was 99.9% Mandalorian. Granted, it's the best episode yet because it was Mando, not Boba. You guys so nailed it the first episode when you said it was just a Mandalorian 2.0, and this proves it. I have no idea where the show is going or what it's doing. I feel like I see where it's going and where it's doing. I just don't know why they did it this way. I definitely agree with the other email or a couple emails back that says it just feels like the first four episodes could have been condensed in about 25 minutes of backstory and flashbacks. And
yeah, and really, you just make this one show, The Mandalorians, just add an S and
yes,
and be cutting back and forth between these characters on their journeys. And you can that provides an even easier way to intermingle the stories, right?
It makes it more the anthology. And when you're running out of creative juice for The Mandalorian and The Current, you can like go back and tell The Mandalorian. Civil War, and you could go back 10,000 years to the dawn of the Republic. You could do all kinds of things if you just call it Mandalorians, because your whole ballywick is just all things Mandalore. But Mike from Sydney says, I'm 5 episodes in the Book of Boba and I'm starting to struggle. The tone of the series has been really jarring, and this episode is no different. While the episode itself was good, I just found it added to the confusion of the series, and now the inevitable team-up just smacks of having to fulfill content quotas, not telling a compelling story. I'm missing something as a viewer. I mean, the tone was jarring just because this is the kind of, like, dark, violent, like, morally gray stuff I thought we'd see in Book of Boba. Like, if you... Right. Boba's not going to be a babysitter, so we can see him do some cool-ass shit, and... No.
Maybe he's surrounded by crime lords and underworld types, whereas Jin has to go out and seek those people. Boba's just surrounded by them in his daily life. Like, yeah, I expected more of this from Boba.
Dan says, there's no way this episode is from the same series, right? You have appropriately junky and yet still awesome technology in Tatooine with Mando's repaired Naboo starfighter. Action scenes advance the story and have both grit and stakes for characters. Plotlines advance the mythos of established characters and tribes from the Star Wars universe, and a decent balance of sentimentality, Grogu's armor, and humor, Peli's motto's junkyard shtick. The refreshing gasp of Star Wars air. Since Mando wants to go see Grogu before joining Boba, do you think we'll see him before he rides in to save the day in the Fett versus Pike War? Will they have any Grogu meetups for the mainline Mandalorian series, or will we see how Luke's training is going next week? That'd be funny if the next 3 episodes are just no Boba. just launching all, soft launching all the other series and seasons they need to.
Right.
Let me ask you this, because Bryce Dallas Howard directed this episode. And did she not also direct the season finale of last year's Mandalorian?
I don't know.
Maybe she's just really good. And they should give her a lot more stuff to do, because this for sure feels different in tone and just confidence from the other stuff we've seen. So maybe she's just like the real good Star Wars director that they need to give a trilogy to or something.
Could be. Or maybe she's got something on the higher ups at Disney. She's got information and she's like, look, you're going to let me put this dripping sack with a head in it in my episode of Boba Fett. Or I go public. You know, there's a reason why this is different, and I don't know what it is, but I'd love to know.
She has found Walt Disney's frozen head and resurrected it and passed current through it, and it's just spouting anti-Semitic crap, and she's got it all. She's got hours of Holocaust, and she's going to let it rip. Going to let it rip if they don't let her behead somebody in every episode she directs. And which I say, more power to you. You got the mouse by its balls.
Yeah.
She's got the Song of the South. And she's got Walt Disney's racist corpse, and she's going to use them both to bring the mouse down if they don't let her play nice with Star Wars. I don't know. It's a compelling theory. that's it for the feedback we got. If you'd like to send us more, it's easy to do so. Tribe@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week with another thrilling episode of The Mandalorian or Boba Fett or fuck, maybe Luke Skywalker, the Jedi Academy. We'll see. This show can be anything. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.